Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, sitting here way overdressed for radio in the studio today, we got a ton of stuff to talk about on what we like to call a Meatloaf Monday. And I think we're well enough past Thanksgiving, we can go ahead and make it a Meatloaf Monday today. Hit it, man. Hit Meatloaf.
I think I'll try the meatloaf sandwich.
Yeah. Do you know what that is?
Yes, meatloaf.
What is it? I'm only asking in case I have to describe it later to a doctor.
Look, it's nutritious. It's delicious.
Made out of meat. Add ketchup if you want. I couldn't care less.
Meatloaf Monday. I like it. In fact, I need to call Charlene and tell her, let's get some meatloaf for Monday. But yeah, you guys, hope you're having a great day on this foggy, rainy, socked in kind of gloomy looking weather, but it's still December, so why not? And JP is pressing buttons on the board. Hey, buddy, how you doing?
I'm all right, I guess, after
this past weekend. I know why.
We just, SMU had one job.
They just had one job.
And if they're going to lose, you got to get demolished.
It wasn't Boise State the spoiler for this? I mean,
No, SMU was the main spoiler. Letting Clemson win, man, if they had just won, Alabama would be in. But nonetheless, I mean, Alabama only has itself to blame for losing to Oklahoma, I guess, so there you go.
Well, and Vandy.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. And Vandy. We don't want to talk about Vandy? Sure, we'll talk about Vandy. Yeah. Woo, go Doors. All right. So, yeah. So, I know it's hard. Just listen. It's the kind of thing that just happens sometimes in football life. Just so you know. I know it's hard. You've never been around this before.
Well, Alabama's a basketball school now.
All right. Hey, we got a great show laid on for you. We got no guests today for a purpose. I chose to just stick with some content that I really want to spend some time unpacking. I like depth. So we're gonna go right into a triple dipper here momentarily, but it looks like I got a mini dipper because we got breaking news, double breaking news coming out of New York City. So we'll talk about that a little bit too. So triple dipper, man, hit it.
The Triple Dipper, three stories you've got to know.
That's right, the Triple Dipper, three stories, three themes, if you will, that you got to know as we run today's show. So first out the gate, regime change. Man, listen, Syria. Now, you may be looking at this going, not our war, man. We need to stay out of this. I'm not saying it is our war, but I will tell you why we should care what happens over there, and I'll tell you why it matters. So we're going to talk about in great detail what just happened, like over the weekend, in Syria, which has impacts on Iran, Israel, Turkey, Russia. I mean, literally, the Middle East has now got a massive sea change taking place that could affect a lot of stuff. So we're going to talk about why it matters with regime change. That's number one on the Triple Dipper. Number two, new boss is the old boss. I don't know if you saw it or not, but President Trump's already acting like President Trump. He just got finished. I think he just wrapped up a trip to France for the opening of Notre Dame. But he was there being feted and greeted by world leaders as if, you know, all hail the conquering hero, you have returned. It's just a hoot to watch. So we're going to talk about new boss is the old boss and how that plays out on the world stage. And then number three, there have been some new developments in what I call beating the trans agenda. We're going to talk about the legal aspects of beating the trans agenda. Like, did you know, and I've been saying it would happen, did you know there's a brand new lawsuit filed by someone who claims that a doctor did things to her body when she was a minor and has altered her for life, and now she believes that she was abused by the medical system. We'll talk about that. Number three on the Triple Dipper, beating the trans agenda. All right, well, let me jump on into my opening monologue, the Right Side Way monologue. As always, remember, attorney Stan McDonald, partner at the law firm of Wilmer & Lee. He is the sponsor of the daily Right Side Way opening monologue. And I'll tell you more about him in a minute. Listen, so last week I talked about arguments that were going on before the Supreme Court of the United States. In the course of that discussion, I mentioned that one of the counsel present had used the term immutable. I mean, for something to be immutable, It must be unable to be changed. It's something that is just what it is. And the natural order of things affirms it, and that nothing can be done to undo it. Immutability is like permanency. It's lasting. It's tangible. It's real. Now, combine that word with how I feel about the United States of America and how really I'm sure that most of my right side ruffians out there feel about America. Are we as a nation, are we immutable? Are we permanent? Well, the answer is kind of yes and no. I believe that we are a nation ordained for purpose. We are founded by godly men for godly principles, and a miracle of God himself is what put us on the map. Everything about the forming of America is miraculous, and I don't want it to change. I want the United States of America to be immutable, but that takes work. Because if we are to be immutable, you got to ask yourself, is it just about geography? Or is the immutability of America something more than that, something bigger than that, something more esoteric than that? What does it take for America to be immutable? Well, I'm reminded, though, of a story about something I may have talked about here on the show before. I believe I have. But I got to Baghdad in the early stages of Operation Iraqi Freedom. And when I first arrived, Camp Victory was still being established in and around Baghdad International Airport. We call that BIAP. A lot of what was there didn't even have hard stands yet. It was tents, and it was things that were temporary, and we were using Iraqi buildings, and even Saddam's old palace was nearby, and it was a hub of activity. The Green Zone was a half hour to the east. It was still being hardened up into a massive fort. But despite the fact that outside the wire was a hostile red zone, I was shocked when I got there to find that there was a thriving Burger King already set up at BIAP. A Burger King. I was blown away. I mean, the chow hall wasn't bad for army food in a war zone, but nonetheless, the Burger King, man, it was going gangbusters. Had an assembly line of basic orders available for the troops who stood in line for up to half an hour to get burgers and fries wrapped in that yellow waxy paper and tasting just like home. At one point, I read that the Burger King in Baghdad, in the early stages of the war, even though it was set up in mobile units and was carry out only, that one Burger King was the third highest grossing Burger King in the entire world. In the entire world. And I'll tell you why. Because it was a symbol of the hometowns that so many troops had left behind to go fight a war on foreign soil. The branding of Burger King stood out for them in the war zone like a beacon. The burgers and the fries, they tasted exactly the same way they were supposed to. Platoon sergeants became heroes when they would pull up in their Humvees and order a sack of cheeseburgers for their whole platoon. And when the troops got them, they were already cold, but nobody cared. It was a consistent taste and sight of home that was imported without being changed. And it was awesome. It was like a piece of America. And everybody wanted a piece of it. It was unchanged. It was the same as expected. It was awesome. And it brought a sense of peace, to be honest. It was kind of like the branding of Burger King is immutable. You can have it back home where it's peaceful, or you can have it in the war zone. It still tasted the same, and it was great. So another conversation, though, while I was in Baghdad, I had a conversation one day with my chief interpreter. I can still picture where we were as we walked across an open area on the FOB. It was the same area of operations where the iconic images were taken of Saddam's statue being torn down. My interpreter's name was Wissam, but we all called him Sammy, and he was like one of us. I'll never forget this moment because of what he said. Just out of the blue, we're walking along. He said, "Hey, sir, I was talking with my father last night. He said to me that the reason that America is so blessed is because they are honorable and they keep their promises." It was a heartfelt statement. He wasn't trying to puff me up in any way. He got nothing out of it. It was one of those things that I logged away in my mind, though, under the "don't forget this moment" category. And I can't help but wonder if his father still feels that way now. But I've always felt that way. And truthfully, I still do. America, from the time of its inception, has always had the immutable characteristic of being a force for good, and that is bigger than our geography. Yeah, we don't always move as fast as we should. We don't always get everything right. But we as a nation are built on the premise that we should move to the good. We have a long tradition of getting there. I mean, did we have slavery? Yes, but we moved to the point that we became the world leader in abolishing it. Were we slow to enter World War II? Arguably, yes, but we became the force that pushed fascism back into a hole. We have a reputation in the world. It's been a reliable reputation, an immutable characteristic, if you will, that America is a force for good. We cannot be changed. No matter where we are still America, much like Burger King can show up in a war zone and taste just the same and give you a sense of home. A touch of America, wherever it is, still carries that same sense of being for the greater good. But the progressive left? They need that to change. The woke left needs the U.S. and its culture and all of its components to be just plain mutable as opposed to immutable. I mean, if the left can build uncertainty at home and abroad, then the immutability of America comes into doubt. We're no longer reliable. The brand has been diminished. It's like going to Burger King anywhere in the world and suddenly find out the burger doesn't taste the same. You know what's on the menu, though. You know how it's made. You already have an expectation before you get there because there are some things that Burger King does without fail. Well, I got news. The same should be said about America. And yet the left needs to tear that down. And I'll be honest with you. Burger King didn't try to change their menu just because they were in a war zone. They knew better. And the left, though, they need America to change. They will do all they can. The entire leftist woke agenda depends on things being seen as uncertain so that they can swoop in and provide their own leftist version of how to fix it. So, yes, there actually is a legal doctrine called the doctrine of immutability. It's often used in the context of defining whether someone has been discriminated against or denied some kind of equal opportunity simply because they have an immutable characteristic like skin color or gender. For something to be immutable in the eyes of the law, it requires being defined, like I said before, as unchangeable, intrinsically immovable, unable to change even if it wanted to. But for something to be just plain old mutable, which is just the opposite, that's to say that it can be changed. It's no longer reliable. So how do you defeat the narrative that says America abolished slavery? Well, you create the world's foremost civil rights and equal opportunity laws, but then you also declare systemic racism. You teach alternative history to kids like the 1619 Project. You declare the need to shut down military training to root out so-called extremism. And just like that, you create an air of uncertainty and you defeat the long-standing positions of immutability. How do you derail the knowledge that America is an economic powerhouse? Well, you just redefine our existential threats. You give us dire Chicken Little perceptions that we're all going to die in 10 years unless we retool everything we do away from fossil fuels and go electric. Just a little anxiety, a little fear-mongering combined with some government mandates, and just like that, you got uncertainty, and suddenly the world doesn't know what America's doing with its economy. But go back to my original thought. The immutable characteristic of America is to be a force for good in the world. Is that still in place? I believe it is, but it has been tarnished. There was a time when Republicans and Democrats and independents could all differ on matters of policy, but in the end, we were all still Americans. We would push for an image on the world stage that America was the biggest dog, but yet a big dog with a big heart and a force for good in the world. And then Barack Obama came along and that tone changed. The president of the United States, for the first time ever, began doing what became known as the Great Apology Tour. He apologized for America for simply being America. Michelle Obama, remember this? She said that for the first time, she was proud of America. The first time in her life. The war in Iraq became an abandonment of allies, and ISIS then came in and filled the vacuum. Fast forward to the Biden administration and the gross incompetence of bailing out of Afghanistan, abandoning citizens and allies. And now the Taliban's back in power and has once again set up a safe haven for terrorism. What was once a fringe element of society got hold of the Oval Office and the power of the bully pulpit, and the progressive left began telling the world that we are no longer a force for good. They even began acting like it, clearly demonstrating to the world that we cannot be counted on. That when you see the brand of the U.S., that the recipes may not be reliably consistent. The goal of the progressive left is to ensure that America's immutable characteristics can be just seen as mutable, and therefore not able to be relied on. It's intentional. They need us torn down so they can build us back in their own distorted image. And I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. I believe that we are still a force for good, and the world is still watching with bated breath to see if we can get this whole thing righted in 2025. Just like a Burger King in Baghdad, we got to be able to provide the sense that no matter where we go, the recipe stays the same. We must provide the sense that all is well because America is immutable. And that's a wrap for The Right Side Way. Well, I know I ran long on that one, and we're going to go right to a break, but I'll just be honest with you. America has to be immutable. We are. We have to be the same. We have to be the force for good on the world stage. We have to be the city on a hill. Anything less than that doesn't sound like the America that was established by our founders. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, pulling pins on truth grenades in here. Hey, by the way, I told you about attorney Stan McDonald. He's the sponsor daily now of the Right Side Way monologue. Attorney Stan McDonald, he's a partner at the law firm of Wilmer & Lee, a great law firm out of Huntsville. Wilmer & Lee, he's been practicing 30 years. He's a veteran of the practice of law in North Alabama. And I'm going to tell you right now, Stan will advocate for all your legal needs, your rights. He's been an absolute warrior also for causes that are near and dear to Right Side Ruffians. And by the way, attorney Stan McDonald, he's not only represented people in every level of courts, federal, state, and local, but he's also done thousands of real estate transactions over the years. So yeah, attorney Stan McDonald, when he's on your side, you will have no greater friend. Likewise, your adversary will have no greater foe. So yes, attorney Stan McDonald at the law firm of Wilmer and Lee is an America First family man, an attorney who is vigilant for those he represents, and you can call him today. Here's his number. You ready? Stan McDonald, Wilmer & Lee. His number is 256-479-3020. That's 256-479-3020. Stan McDonald. Tell him you heard about it on Right Side. And you ready? No representation made the quality of legal service before is greater than the quality of legal service before other lawyers. I think I'm going to break my record at some point.
You want me to start timing you?
Yeah, I do, man, I do. That one almost felt like I was going to be tongue-tied, but then it all came out.
Yeah, it all worked out.
Hey, text lines are open, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Alabama's not going to the playoffs. Oh, did I mention that? I'm sorry. Was that for later in the show? I didn't.
I'm waiting for John Paul's text making fun of me about
it. He's gonna. You know he's gonna.
Yeah.
So how is the RTR Nation doing right now? Are y'all like in shock? Like we didn't sneak in? What do you mean we didn't sneak in?
I'm not in shock. And honestly, they got it right. But you know, I talked about this on Off the Bench of if it came down to the three-loss team that wasn't a conference champion, I feel like Alabama should be the one of the three-loss teams. But since Clemson won the ACC championship, you cannot put an 11-2 SMU over 9-3 Alabama. You just can't. You can't do that. I think that's just a bad precedent. So I think they got it right ultimately, even though it does suck. So
if we are close enough, I give you a high five. Yeah. Just there? No, it's there. All right, there we go. All right, listen, we got plenty more of that came from press breaking news out of New York City. You guys stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one, I am talking about this one. I mean, Alabama. Y'all, Alabama. I mean, this show goes like, whoo, way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi. All thrown in just for good measure. I am going to make an announcement. I got two or three announcements, so brace yourselves. So first of all, if you are listening to us on our Birmingham affiliate, 101.1 FM out of Birmingham, just know that first of the year, that is going to change. So we had contract negotiations ongoing with that station, and we've decided to go ahead and let that one go. And I don't know how to describe it otherwise, except that we will not be on 101.1 FM no more coming January 1st, unless something changes. But in the meantime, I will say this. You guys can always catch us online. In fact, a lot of y'all have been catching us online. In fact, the lovely Charlene, who lives within what I would call the range of 101.1, always listens to us online no matter what. So I would just encourage you guys, check us out online. Make sure you know how to find us. We're going to say this a lot for the next 2 weeks because our Birmingham folks, we love you guys. You're ruffians as much as any other market. So we don't want to lose track of some of y'all. Still listen on by going. You can go to rightsidemedia.org. You can go to Rumble. You can go to Twitter, to Right Side Media. You can go to my personal account, at Sin Phil Williams on Right Side, on X. You can also go to YouTube. We're all over the place. So if you are listening to us on the Birmingham affiliate, just know that will change in 2 weeks. Now, I have, actually 3 weeks, I have a pretty cool announcement. So our brand new podcast lineup just increased by two. And as of last night, the fourth podcast lineup is out. Am I right? What time did it come out? 5 o'clock last night?
5 o'clock, yep.
Controversial Mom. I love the name, by the way. The Controversial Mom with Emily Jones, who founded Moms for Liberty. And how did one of y'all wrote up on it and just said that she's a mom who got involved? What did you say about it? You just said that she was like a mom who saw things she thought had to be addressed and decided to just get busy.
To speak up and be controversial, even though it really shouldn't be controversial.
It's not controversial, but the left thinks it's controversial, which, you know, that's what we want, right?
Exactly.
So, last week we started the third newest one, which is the Liberty Minute with former Navy SEAL Jared Hudson, and that's already doing good. And then Sunday afternoon, the brand spanking new Controversial Mom came out, and they're all on YouTube, and we'd love you to check them out because we're pretty stoked. At this point now, we have aside from the show and the audio podcast version of the show, we now have multiple short videos coming out on a regular basis. Plus, we have four now video podcasts, Right Click, Right Philosophy, Liberty Minute, and The Controversial Mom, and they're all great. So check them out. Rightsidemedia.org is one of the quickest ways to find all of it. That was like a long, shameless plug. All right, listen, text lines are indeed open. Who have I got in here? Bobby from brand spanking new in the text lines says, go Navy, beat Army. Bobby from Warrior, Alabama.
That is the only game this week. So
it's a good one, though.
It'll be a very fun one.
This may be one of the most highly contested Army-Navy games, and who knows when.
I think these would be the best two Army-Navy teams playing in that game in a long time. And Trump will be at the game, too, so that'll be exciting as well.
That's right.
Don't think the current sitting president will be there, but nevertheless.
Nah. John from Huntsville says, JP, if you join my ESPN Right Side Ruffians Capital One Bowl Mania group or my ESPN CFP bracket group, I won't make fun of Alabama, and I'll even give you Alabama a compliment. I'm 99% sure they will demolish Michigan in the ReliaQuest Bowl.
I'm pretty disappointed in that bowl, I must say. I was really hoping that they would get Miami. I really wanted to see that, but,
The ReliaQuest Bowl, where is that?
That's in Tampa.
I miss the days when they had their own name and it was sponsored by. Now they name them, you're like, everybody knew where the Orange Bowl was. Everybody knew where the Cotton Bowl was. Everybody knew where the Rose Bowl was. And you look at it now and you're like, ReliaQuest Bowl.
There's too many bowls.
What the heck is that?
There's way too many bowls.
Well, when I heard, and I'm an Auburn fan, so I can say this. When I heard that if Auburn had beat Alabama and been 6-6, they would have been bowl eligible, I thought, it doesn't mean much anymore.
No, it doesn't. Everybody and their mama gets a bowl.
It's like participation trophies now.
I know. It's. Ugh. But I was really hoping for a Miami one. I mean, Michigan, it's kind of a letdown.
Bobby from Warrior just said, since you're not going to be on WXJC 101.1 in Birmingham at the first of the year, will you be on another radio station? That is being worked on now. We have some announcements that we are not prepared to make at this point. But I will say that coming off of one station does not mean maybe getting on others. Just saying. So, Bobby, stand by for that. Just get us online for the meantime. Thomas from Athens says, anti-Americans within the U.S. and outside are immutable in their dislike, disdain, and their strategies and tactics to bring the USA down. Ditto for anti-Christians and anti-Semites. Maybe even their immutable hatred. Yeah, immutability goes both ways. You're right. I prefer our version. I like being immutable as a force for good. And, I don't want the immutability of the geographic, so to speak, U.S. to ever go away. But I also don't want us to be geographic and yet the immutability of us being a force for good somehow fades. I want it to truly be immutable, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Jeff Rowe from Indiana says, Phil, the only thing I found immutable in the United States is death taxes, overspending, and no trailer at Falkville. Oh, man, are you stuck again, brother? I am sorry. Okay. Alex Mathen says, Colonel, you are bringing up all manner of wonderful memories. Oh, she was there. She was there in the early days when I was there in Baghdad. And she was at the same place. And so she knows that Burger King well. She says, in addition to Burger King, don't forget there was Cinnabon, Pizza Hut, and Gloria Jean's Coffee. I do recall that. But the Burger King is the one that got me. In fact, when I first got there, I think it was really about the only one. The other ones came later. And it was like, listen, it was like, I'm talking to JP now, but it was like four double wides, maybe two or three double wides that were put together. And they were slightly elevated somehow. I'm not sure how that was, but they were slightly elevated. And you had to walk upstairs, you walked through and came out the other side. And it was just like a constant mill of French fries and hamburgers coming out of that place. And there weren't, you didn't have all the whole panoply of the menu. You had cheeseburgers, double cheeseburgers, fries, and I think you had Whoppers.
That's all you need, really.
What else is there?
Exactly.
Yeah. But anyway, she says, as dear as those memories are, my defining moment was when a teenage Iraqi interpreter that I had the pleasure of praying with to accept Jesus as his savior got up in what had been Saddam Hussein's fishing lodge turned Victory Chapel and thanked the United States for invading his country. He says, Iraqis are among the millions who desperately need the United States to be immutable. What a beautiful text. Thank you, Allie. Thank you for your service and thank you for what you do. John C. from Madison says, Pizza Inn from Esconville. What? Oh, great monologue. I missed that part. No, that's yesterday. It says, great monologue. When I was at the Patriot site in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, we were actually able to order pizza from Escon Village. We would get chicken pizza, but the pieces of chicken would be like 4 or 5 inches apart. So there's like, but I get it, man. You still had something going on. That's great. Thanks for being there. Steve from Huntsville says, establishment media figures and some, I won't read that out loud, Democrats are concerned that by pardoning, okay, why are we talking about the pardon right now? I'm not there at the moment, but Steve says, but it tarnish his legacy of being the worst president in America. Yeah, nothing much you can do to tarnish that. All right, two more texts, and then I'm going to jump into my stuff here, and I got to talk about some breaking news. We're not even going to get on the dippers till I'm through talking about that. John from Brownsboro says, the next day off you have, you should just queue up your best monologues for a full show. Man, John, thank you, brother. I appreciate that. David from Athens, we're still going to do a book. I've got it organized. I've got it just about ready. Now it's time to get it editorialized, and we're going to do monologues. They're all coming in. Just going to call the book The Right Side Way and just run it. Like daily readings. Like they're about 4.5 pages long each. Daily readings of A Dose of Liberty. Just saying.
It's a great title.
I like the title. A Dose of Liberty.
A Daily Dose of Liberty.
Daily Dose of Liberty. Like a little devotional, but it's liberty.
Yeah.
David from Bucky's says, JP, Tennessee is ranked number 1, Auburn number 2 in men's basketball. Any thoughts?
It's hard to tell. Right? It's hard to tell who the number 1 or number 2 team is really right now because, I mean, Kansas lost last night to Missouri in basketball, which is crazy. But I will say this. The SEC has 5 of the top 10 teams right now. I think that the SEC is by far the best conference of basketball this year, so I'm really excited for conference play to start. I'll say that. Anybody in the SEC, this is just like football. I feel like anybody in the SEC can beat anybody right now. So
I think SEC basketball has finally become what SEC football has been.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. It's pretty crazy. I think the SEC, they had the SEC-ACC challenge, and the SEC went 14-2 in that against the ACC teams. So it's, who would have thought that like 5 years ago?
I want you to know that I'm learning from you too, by the way. Last night I was hanging out our small group from church. We had our Christmas gathering, and I was talking about the iBob coming
the
up.
The iBob.
I said, y'all heard about the iBob, right? I said, like, I knew things. iBob.
The iBob.
iBob. And so, yeah. John from Harvest says, Phil, love the monologue. And I just saw a tweet that Trump plans to propose a plan to implement paper ballots, one-day voting, voter ID, and proof of citizenship for all elections. Please, please, please let this be true. John from Harvest. Yeah, John, so here's the thing. The Constitution requires the implementation of election law to be done at the state level. But Congress can mandate stipulations that have to be incorporated. That's why we have 18 is the voting age. It's across the board. It's everybody. That's why we have election day established, because Congress said so. So I agree. I think that Congress can say certain things like single day voting and voter ID required. We'll see if they can get there. It's amazing what happens to be controversial. But anyway, I think it's a go. I would love it. Whew. I just don't want them to centralize control of the elections in D.C. I think that would be bad. All right, listen, that's enough. That's a ton. You guys are amazing. So it's text lines are going to stay open, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. We're taking a break right now. We're coming right back. And I got to tell you, we got breaking news on the Daniel Penny trial, and we got breaking news on the assassination of the UnitedHealthcare CEO, both out of New York City, Phil Williams. Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man. just making common sense like a superpower. Hey, a couple of breaking news stories that have happened just today. You guys may already be aware. Let's take them. There's two of them. Let's take the first one. Let's do the CEO, the assassination of the CEO from United Healthcare. He's walking the street in New York City, just in a reasonably safe area. You can tell he's just on his way to a meeting or a dinner or something. He's got a suit on and he's walking along, and a fellow wearing a hoodie and a backpack steps out with a silenced pistol and puts, I want to say, four rounds into him. And kills him right there, and then calmly walks away, gets on a bicycle, and leaves. And the whole thing, I mean, it was caught on surveillance camera. It's very obvious that it was an intentional act. It was no drive-by. There was nothing like that. Anyway, so the manhunt has been underway. Well, the killer left clues everywhere. It's almost like he seemed professional and yet not professional. Well, we now know, we have a suspect. How about that? They've arrested a guy in Altoona, Pennsylvania, named Luigi Mangione. So young Luigi Mangione, what do we know about him so far? I mean, you saw some stuff on him earlier.
Yeah, so the main thing I've seen, so he was valedictorian of his high school, which is a prestigious high school. I believe it was the Gilman School of Founders, whatever. But he was studying AI at the University of Pennsylvania, and supposedly he's like a wicked, I wouldn't say genius, but a very, very smart individual. And he... Like you said, they found in his backpack when he was caught, they found possibly the pistol that he used with a suppressor, but then they also found the police chief was hesitant to call it a manifesto, but it was something that expressed motive that made them have reason to believe that he would be the guy because there was documents that expressed like dissatisfaction.
Against the healthcare industry and stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. But what was really scary was that where they found this guy, like my whole mom's side of the family lives there. I've been to Altoona, Pennsylvania. Many times in my life. I've probably been to the McDonald's he was caught at once before, you know, so it's pretty scary that, I mean, small town Pennsylvania that this guy was just looming.
Yeah, he's just eating a burger or something at McDonald's when they swooped in on him.
Yeah.
Apparently they found some social media contacts.
He posted a quote from the Unabomber while they were looking for him. So I think my guess is that this is the guy, I would say.
Well, with a silenced pistol in his pack and a manifesto, I think we're probably there. But innocent until proven guilty. But even still, I'm glad this didn't linger. I'm glad we don't have this like long-standing, a year from now, whatever happened to that guy who just brazenly assassinated someone on the street. I mean, there's murders in New York City all the time. I hate to say that, but there are all the time. But this one just seemed to rock people because there was no criminal element. There was no gangland activity. There was no drug transaction. There was no theft. He didn't even stop to get his wallet or his watch.
It was ominous.
Yeah, it was very ominous. Yeah. Just steps out of the shadows, silenced pistol. There's another bystander. If you remember that, there's another bystander like standing there leaning against the wall and saw him, and the guy could care less. He just did it. He walked up, boom, put one round in him, had to rechamber a round because something didn't cycle right, and put two or three more rounds in him. It was crazy.
Well, this kid's supposed to be smart, but he went and ate at a McDonald's while there's a manhunt for him, you know? Maybe not the smartest thing to do.
Luigi Mangione, that's what we know about him so far. The other breaking story is one that I find extremely gratifying. In fact, I will just tell you that just a few minutes ago on Twitter or X, Daniel Penny, the Marine veteran who has been on trial for his life, for having intervened when a crazed drug addict, schizophrenic criminal, a violent criminal at that, got on a subway in March of last year, threatened to kill people and began going off. I mean, this guy already had a violent history of attacking people on the subway, and Daniel Penny intervened, put him in a headlock, had him down on the ground. The guy died later. He didn't die then. He died a little bit later. But Daniel Penny's been tried for manslaughter. He was just... acquitted today. The jury came back. You may remember on Friday, we had the breaking news story that the jury was deadlocked on the question of manslaughter. So the prosecution immediately asked the judge to dismiss the deadlocked issue of manslaughter and send the jury back on the question of criminally negligent homicide. That's called a lesser offense. Criminally negligent homicide still requires the jury to find that in terms of criminally negligent, that he acted in a way that a normal or reasonable person would not have acted with disregard for the consequences of his actions. The fact that they were sending it back to the jury was considered infuriating because the judge had already advised the jury through jury charges that failure to convict on the first count of manslaughter meant they could not go to the other one. So when they were deadlocked, that should have been it, was what everybody thought. And then the judge sent it back anyway. Well, Daniel Penny was acquitted today on the remaining count. The jury didn't even take about 4 hours to deliberate. They came in, they were given their new marching orders, they went in, and they said, we're done with this. He's innocent. And they came back and had a unanimous verdict, which is kind of interesting because they were deadlocked on one, but then they came back unanimous today. I don't know who had second thoughts. It may mean that there was just a one holdout that decided not to hold out anymore.
And only took a day. I mean, they started the deliberations today, right? So, I mean, it didn't take long for them to...
They didn't deliberate over the weekend.
Yeah.
They deliberated today for about 4 hours. And that's... So I started to say a minute ago, so Daniel Penny and his lawyers just posted a picture on Twitter of them having a beer with their thumbs up in a bar in New York City. And meanwhile, I will say this, Black Lives Matter is threatening to riot. In fact, one of the activist leaders of Black Lives Matter in New York City just called for what he calls black vigilantes to rise up. Listen, I don't, but they were already arresting people outside the courthouse. I don't think New York City is going to put up with it this time. I think the whole BLM thing burned itself out and they've lost love for it. They know that they got a different day. I think if Trump had won the election, it might be more scary. But right now, what we're seeing is D.A. Alvin Bragg's on a losing streak. And I'm saying it's time just to lose him in general. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, coming right back. Regime change in Syria. We'll talk about it. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two. I got so much stuff here about what's happened in Syria. So I'm calling this part of the Dipper regime change. This has been a turn of events in the past 72 hours or so that I don't know if I can begin to describe to the extent that I believe this is going to have an impact upon geopolitical premises around the Middle East and beyond. So I felt like I needed to break this down today and not only tell you what happened, because, you know, the what is important, but why does it matter to us? You may be looking at this going, I don't care about wars in other parts of the world. I just want to pull back and I want to get out of this kind of... I get it. And I'm not here to talk to you about why we need to go to war. That's not what I'm going to do. But I'm going to tell you what is about to start unraveling, if you will, in some parts of the world. I mean, what just happened in Syria has dramatic impact on Russia, on Iran, on Israel, on Hezbollah, this is one of those things that if you had to find one of these linchpin places, like if you were looking at a strategy for how we can undo a whole bunch of bad actors all at one time, bam, take down the Bashar al-Assad regime in Syria, and that's what just happened. So just to flash back real quick, just a week ago, this is crazy. But just a week ago, the Syrian military, the actual government military, and Russian air forces were conducting joint air raids against Islamist rebels. So just so you know, so in 2011, Syria went into a civil war. And if you're not familiar with the map, I'll kind of give you the lay of the land. Picture Israel right there on the Red Sea. Israel right to the right of Israel. You know, you've got Jordan, Iraq, Iran further to the east. And then just above that, you've got Lebanon, and then you've got, bam, Syria, this huge expanse of Syria, which is a pretty large country. And then above that, you've got Turkey. Just kind of giving you the layout here. The idea of a civil war in Syria has been ongoing, but it's been stalemate, and then it'll flare up, and then stalemate, and then it'll flare up since 2011. So for 13 years, they've been going at it. There were pro-democracy protests that occurred back in 2011. And then Bashar al-Assad, who followed his father, who was the dictator before him, they responded by opening fire on their own people for daring to speak out in pro-democracy protests. The civil war since 2011 is believed to have killed over 500,000 people in Syria. 500,000 Syrians have died in the civil war. It's been one of those where, and there have been all these factions. So while you think of Syria as being a nation where the government controls things, they really didn't. The government controlled Damascus and Aleppo and the coastal regions they have along the Mediterranean, and they were semi in control of other places, and they had no control of some. You may recall when Barack Obama and Joe Biden ripped us out of Iraq without so much as a how do you do, they left a power vacuum and ISIS filled it. We had to go back in, and we've been fighting ISIS ever since. Yes, we still have 900 troops in northern Syria fighting ISIS. Who else is over there? Well, you've got the Syrian government. That's the al-Assad government. And then you got all of these factions, these small disparate groups, some of which we've actually declared to be terrorist organizations. I'll tell you about that in a minute. And then we've got Hezbollah, which comes and goes and sort of helps the al-Assad regime by propping up some portions of their land only because they wanted Iran to use it as a land bridge to get their supplies to Hezbollah. And then you've got the Kurds. The Kurds are an ethnic minority. If you're not familiar with the Kurds, I tell you what, if there's anybody in the Middle East who's got it going on, it's the Kurds. They have done more to stand up under much than I can hardly think of anybody else who has done what they've done. And they are always great fighters, and they are typically allies of the United States. And the U.S. has been working with the Kurds to fight ISIS. The Kurds are hated just because it's like an ethnic thing. They're just hated because they're Kurds. Turkey hates the Kurds. Syria hates the Kurds. Iraq doesn't even like the Kurds, and they've got great Kurds. I'm just saying, the Kurds are like, the Kurds want Kurdistan. They want their own country. They want to, but they're not going to get it anytime soon. In the meantime, they live where they live and they fight where they fight, and the U.S. is allied with them. So we've got U.S. troops, like 900 U.S. troops on multiple small FOBs and bases and landing zones in northern Syria fighting ISIS. While meantime, all these rebel groups are also fighting against the government. While meantime, Hezbollah comes up from Lebanon to the south and sort of stakes out the ground to try and keep things open so they can get their supplies through from Iran. Meanwhile, Russia, why is Russia there? Well, Russia desperately wants Syria to succeed. And I'm going to tell you in great detail, but just know this. The only warm water port that Russia has that gets them out of the Black Sea, which is a landlocked sea, comes down through what's called the Turkish Straits. You go through the Bosphorus and then the Dardanelles, and then all of a sudden you're in the Mediterranean, and they have one port where the Russian Navy docks and resupplies, and it's on the coast of Syria. It's the only warm water port they have to be able to exit the Black Sea and get out into the international waters of the ocean. It's the only way to the Atlantic, and they've got to have this spot. And so they have an air base, the Russians do, and they have a naval base right there near the coast of Syria, and the Syrian government just fell. And the question is, does this now curtail Russian power projection in that part of the world? And the answer is yes. So all said and done, I gave you the quick encapsulation of why what just happened what does it mean? What it means is a shift in the balance of power. Suddenly, Iran can't fund Hezbollah by shipping supplies. Iran's never going to be able to fly the supplies in with any great, ability. So they've been driving them across the land bridge of Syria down into Lebanon. Can't do it no more. And then Russia may be losing its only naval base. And then the Syrian rebel groups, well, they're mostly fundamentalist Islam. Crazy thing is Bashar al-Assad, who gasses his own people and is a really evil guy, actually made sure that Christians didn't get persecuted. And so now you've got Islamist fundamentalists who are taking over the government. What's going to happen to the Christian minority in Syria? We don't know. And then, oh, by the way, you've got these Islamic fundamentalists who took over the Syrian government will suddenly have access to chemical weapons in the stockpiles that Assad left behind. What does that mean? And listen, I'm going to tell you, there's a whole lot of questions. And Biden is still in charge for the next, 30 days.
I was just going to add, unfortunately, there's already videos of Christians in Syria being captured by terrorists in Syria.
Well, those new or old?
New.
They're new?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
So, unfortunately, there's that aspect to it. It's does bad just replace bad, you know, in this situation? That's, I think, that's kind of where I'm leaning. And it's just, yeah, what will the bad be, I guess, is the main question.
Yeah. You wind up with having your best worst choice.
Yeah.
Because there's no good choices in there.
No.
I mean, the only good choice would be if suddenly the Kurds were in charge. That's not going to happen.
And Syria is going to be, I think, an enemy of the United States, no matter who's in there. So, I mean, maybe if not even an enemy, not an ally, but for sure.
Yeah.
So
the question now is going to be, will these Islamic groups that took over, first of all, will they truly coalesce, or were they just fighting alongside each other because the enemy of my enemy is my friend? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or will they coalesce into a cohesive government, and then what kind of government will they be? Will they be a Taliban? We don't know yet. The jury's still out on this. Will they be a Taliban, or will they be, you know, more of an Iraqi government where they set up a parliamentary structure and they're doing the best they can in a bad part of the world? Remains to be seen. Meanwhile, Bashar al-Assad, the guy who gasses his own people, the guy who was doing airstrikes with Russian airplanes just a few weeks ago or last week, has fled the country. So he's officially gone. He and his family fled, and Russia has now announced, as of today, I believe it is, that Bashar al-Assad and his family have been given asylum in Moscow. So, yeah, that's all happening. What are you laughing about?
It's just the irony to me. I don't know. It's just kind of funny that he goes to Russia to get asylum. It tells you all you need to know, really, I think.
It does, and it's a mess. And the group, one of the major groups, the one that actually took over Damascus, the capital of Syria, is a group called Hayat Tahrir al-Sham. They call them HTS, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham. They are actually designated as a terrorist organization by the United States. They were very closely aligned with al-Baghdadi, the ISIS terrorist in Iraq. And so, yeah, we're going to see how this goes. All right, I'm going to break it down in more details, but I want you guys to be equipped for those conversations. When somebody says Syria, I mean, why do we care? Oh, we care a lot. We care a whole lot. And the question is going to be, what are we going to have to care about more of in the days to come? Let's take a break real quick. We'll come right back to it. Regime change, number one on the Triple Dipper. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, saving the world one soundbite at a time. All right. So we're in this number one of the Triple Dipper, regime change. I feel like we already done a whole show. You know what? I mean,
lots gone on over the weekend.
It's a lot. It's a lot's happened. All right. So Syria's civil war kicked off in full, like I said, in 2011. And just a week ago, Russia was helping them with airstrikes. And then, bam, fast forward a week, and you're looking right now at a group of rebels, Fox News, Dateline, yesterday. Syrian rebel takeover will have a remarkable ripple effect equivalent to the Berlin Wall, says one GOP rep. I don't know if it'll be that big, but I think it's definitely going to be big. I can't convey to you enough how much this is going to impact the balance of power in the Middle East and beyond. So Assad's now fled the country, and Representative Joe Wilson, who's a representative in Congress from South Carolina, a Republican, he said, "This is so significant. The fall of the Assad dictatorship, the ripple effect of this is going to be remarkable. It's equivalent to the Berlin Wall, which led to a ripple effect of dozens of countries becoming free after 50 years of occupation and totalitarian control." Maybe so. Now, keep in mind, we don't know what all's going to – and I'll give you a quick personal aside. I literally met a former Iraqi general, and I know all the stuff about, we didn't find the weapons of mass destruction. Okay, I get it. We never found it, they say. But I'm also going to tell you right now, there's a whole lot of expansive sand out there. Someone somewhere is going to dig one day, and they're going to find something, and I'm going to go, well, there it is. But I met a former Iraqi general who told me that he personally observed the weapons of mass destruction and or the precursors for WMD being loaded onto civilian jetliners and flown from Baghdad to Damascus, Syria, before the invasion of U.S. forces. His words, I got nothing to corroborate, but I do know this. You've got a repeatedly bad actor in Bashar al-Assad who used gas on his own people, chemical weapons on his own people. So this collection of, like, I don't know, 30,000 or so rebels have taken over Damascus. I saw a video earlier. It looks like the presidential palace is already being looted. There's that. That tends to happen. I saw that happen in Baghdad too. Just looted the crap out of the place. Just burned things. Like, it's like they go crazy when they suddenly realize he's gone. Ding dong, the wicked witch is dead. Next thing you know, the munchkins are singing and dancing and they're burning stuff. And that happened in Baghdad. But what could it mean for the balance of power? Well, the Arab states right now are sitting back and watching. But when the war first broke out, it became very apparent that Iran was aligning itself with Syria. And so groups like, countries like Saudi Arabia and the UAE and others, the Sunni Arab states, they all began to sort of assist the rebels because they were not going to abide by the idea of Iran having a projection of power. Over the years, that had softened somewhat. Saudi Arabia and the UAE even led efforts in most recent years to be able to sort of bring Syria back into the fold, try to normalize some relations to see if they could reconcile some things. That's out the window. So what are we going to have now? Now, are we going to have regional instability? Are we going to have trade agreements? Are we going to have, you know, treaties? Are we going to have a rogue regime setting up in the vacuum? Because there is a vacuum. Vacuums never go unfilled. Vacuums always get filled by something or somebody. They just do. Hollow space does not remain hollow. It's like you drill a hole while there's water running, water will go through the hole. It just will. And that's going to happen. What does it do to Iran? Well, Iran is on its heels right now. Iran is now looking at the fact that Iranian proxies are getting just hammered right now. Hamas is almost non-existent. Hezbollah is being ripped to shreds. Remember the exploding beepers? Remember the fact that we had incursions into Lebanon by Israeli forces? They are scorching the earth as to Hezbollah and Hamas. Hezbollah got all its resupply from Iran largely through the land bridge of coming across Syria to drop down into the northern part of Lebanon and deliver supplies, and that's gone. Iran's trying to figure out what it can do. So that's good. And yet, what will fill the vacuum? Well, what's going to happen with Israel? Well, Israel's looking at it going, hey, we don't mind Syria being gone one bit. Syria, too bad for your luck. But is there going to wind up being a new government there that's even worse than Assad, who, by the way, Assad has been letting Israel, I say letting, I shouldn't say it that way. Israel has been striking targets, Hezbollah targets in Syria for the last couple of years. And there's been no response back from al-Assad. What's going to happen now? Wait and see. We don't know. And then there's Russia. And like I said, Russia just is holding on to its forces. But there are reports right now that Russian Navy vessels have pulled out of the port and are sitting offshore as a protective measure right now, because they don't know what's going to happen or what stability they're going to have. But they say that they have made an agreement to secure their bases, and they have to have those bases. Russia has been stirring up trouble in Africa for the longest time. Well, how do they resupply Africa? They tend to come through those Turkish straits, stop off at their port in Syria, and then go resupply from there. And they're about to lose that power projection platform. That's a big, hairy deal. When you're trying to be a power that is expeditionary. All right, so Assad is gone, but did you know that the United States was dropping bombs this weekend too in Syria? Like, lots of them. When I come back, I'll tell you about that. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, regime change. We'll talk about it. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one I'm talking about, Alabama. Don't argue with me. It's where I'm sitting right now. It's Alabama. Y'all, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. I am in number one of the Triple Dipper, talk regime change in Syria. And I cannot stress enough the fact that this is a big deal. So I'm about to equip you guys for that amazing water cooler conversation with one of your coworkers. Goes, I don't know. I mean, Syria. What's the big deal? It's who cares about Syria? We don't like Assad anyway, right? Okay, you now have the scoop. And oh, by the way, did you know that we have 900 or so U.S. forces there? Sometimes up to 2,500. Well, last night, U.S. military, according to airandspaceforces.com, U.S. military conducted a punishing series of airstrikes against the Islamic State group. Wait a minute. There's more? Yes. And this, by the way, this is not like a couple of, you know, F-16s or something. No. This is, we had airstrikes with B-52s, F-15 Strike Eagles, A-10s, and then something like a dozens of airstrikes across Islamic State leadership positions and fighters and camps in central Syria. We dropped like 140 munitions on 75 targets this weekend. Why is that important? There's a real concern right now that in the vacuum left behind by an Assad government being overthrown, that not only do we have to wonder and worry somewhat about what kind of government will take its place, but now ISIS might feel freed up to try and fill some of that vacuum themselves. ISIS does not need a chance to regrow. ISIS does not need to be allowed to regenerate. ISIS is a horrible, terrible exporter of terror given the opportunity. And so we've been keeping ISIS tamped down now, working with the Kurds. The Kurds lead most of the missions, but the U.S. certainly has its portion of it, not the least of which is this weekend, we were bombing the crap out of them. So that just happened. So if you think for a second that we're really, we don't have anything on over there. Yeah, we do. 1,000 U.S. troops. That's big doings. B-52s dropping bombs. Yes, we do. There is stuff happening. I don't know to what extent Trump will maintain this, but I do know this. Trump hates ISIS. If you remember, one of his bragging rights as a campaigner and as a former president is that he's the one who made sure that ISIS got squashed. For a while there, ISIS held like a third of Iraq and about a third of Syria. They were trying to form their own caliphate. They were seizing land left and right. They were destroying whole villages. They were wiping out people. They were heinous people. Trump ordered the U.S. military in to destroy ISIS, and we did. So I don't think Trump's going to just say, well, let's all step back now and see how ISIS does. No, he doesn't want ISIS. But U.S. forces look like we're going to have a separate layer of action. Story here from Stars and Stripes. Stars and Stripes points out that U.S. troops are fighting Iranian-backed militias and a resurgence of the Islamic State, but the majority of what we're doing is dealing with ISIS. We're really not getting involved in the civil war, but we're there. And there have been multiple times when the civil war kind of crept in on us, and we had some force-on-force issues. American military personnel are currently focused on preventing ISIS, but if the U.S. were to leave, then Iran would regain their much-needed land bridge to Hezbollah, and we can't let that happen. It's a crazy set of circumstances, y'all. The question is, what's going to happen with Russia? Russia is so depleted by Ukraine right now. Russia can't even see straight. Russia was not able to staff fully or to man fully the mission that it said it was going to do to back Bashar al-Assad, and so now al-Assad is gone. Russia's now worried they're going to lose their only warm water port. Kremlin sources, according to Reuters, say that Russia did favor a political situation to the crisis in Syria. Well, that just tells you they didn't have the military capability, because it's not often that Russia favors the political resolution. But they're trying to secure rights to maintain their air base at a place called Hamam and the Tartus port where they keep their naval ships. Russian warships have indeed pulled off the coast, according to one report, trying to maintain their security, and Russian oil fields are at risk. So a lot of things are happening, y'all. I could belabor this. I'll go ahead and pretty much call it right there. But right now, who are the winners and losers? The U.S. is in a wait-and-see mode, but we're going to keep doing our mission when it comes to ISIS. Israel wins right now because Hezbollah can't get its resupply, and Hezbollah is being damaged by this. Iran loses because Iran is now losing part of its power projection and losing its land bridge to its proxy, Hezbollah. Russia loses big time because suddenly they don't have the ability to know for a fact that they're going to maintain the only warm water they purport they have before going out into open ocean. And if you look at a map, look at where Russia has to come out of the Black Sea. Look at it. It tells you everything you want to know. You got Russia trying to get out of the Black Sea through the strait, the Turkish Straits, and the only port they have was with their ally Syria. And right now, they're negotiating like madmen trying to keep that port open because it's theirs. It's like a base. It's like us having a base in Germany. It's a power projection platform, and they're at risk of losing it. All said and done, Bashar al-Assad, a generational regime of terror, a guy who gassed his own people. But now that he's gone, you got to look at it and go, well, what the heck's going to fill the vacuum? And the point is, we don't really know yet. So keep your eyes on it, because is it a news story? Darn right it is. It's not an isolationist thing. It's not a expeditionary thing. It's a thing that's going to affect us whether we want it to or not. So you got to keep your eyes on it. Take some text messages before I go to the break. Jim from Grove Oak just said, I'm late to the show today, Colonel, but having two ears and only one mouth, I always learn more by listening than talking. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate you, man. Herb from Gurley says, during this transitional period in Syria, Israel's been busy. They've taken out many Syrian defense positions so the positions cannot be used against Israel, including chemical weapons facilities. Israel wants a buffer zone between Israel and the new Syria. Also, the transitional Syrian government released a Declaration of Independence-type document that promises all groups can live together without harm. Wait and see on that one. Herb, great text. Thank you so much. Chris from Huntsville says, the old ISIS was also destroying archaeological sites across the Mideast. Ruthless. Yeah, they were. Jeff Rowe from Indiana says, hey, Phil, we're about to have a regime change here in America as well. Those darn MAGA rebels. Far out. Thomas from Athens says, Syria. Aleppo had 300,000 Christians in 2011. All but 30,000, including Armenians, have been driven out or immigrated from Syria to safe places. Two archbishops have disappeared. Now the Islamist rebels have made promises for their safety, but who knows? We'll wait and see, man. Brian from Huntsville says, give the Kurds Sevastopol if they can hold it. No doubt. John from Huntsville says, JP, he's picking on your Atlanta Falcons. He's doing the sports thing with you, man.
Man, you don't have to tell me, John. I know. Trust me, I know.
And then Danny from Madison said, I was there. I was talking about my monologue about the Burger King in Baghdad. He said, I was there when the Marines with AAVs pulled the Saddam statue down in Baghdad. Outstanding. He said, the people were so grateful to the U.S. As you know the meaning, they were hitting the Saddam statue in the face with their shoes. Yep. They took them off and then hit it. And then they dragged the head of that statue through the streets and kept hitting it with shoes. The bottom of a shoe, by the way, in the Middle East, most of the country, is considered a massive insult. It's like saying, you're no better than what I step on.
Well, I think about that video of when Bush was over. Yeah. What country was that?
George W. Bush. Yeah. I forgot which country he was in.
When the reporter took off both shoes and Bush just ducked them both. Yeah. And
they're actually pretty good throws, but he was also a pretty good ducker.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Danny from Madison, thanks for your service, man. I appreciate that. Semper Fi. And that Saddam statue being torn down, that was my AO. I passed by that every time I went outside the wire. I was right there in the old Iraqi Olympic complex for my FOB, and we were right next to it.
Before we move on from the topic, I have a question. I feel like I'm constantly trying to have so much learning to do, and it's just because I was eight when the Civil War started. So I feel like I'm catching up a lot of times on stuff like this. But overall, would you consider this to be a stabilizing or destabilizing thing in the region? Obviously there's winners and losers, like you said, but just overall, do you think this will be more destabilizing, or do you think this is more of a stabilizing thing to happen in the region?
Okay, so a couple of factors. One, it comes right at the time when we're having what I would call, our own regime change, so to speak.
Yeah.
So the foreign policy of the Biden administration is going to be a whole lot different than the foreign policy of, so we're not, whatever we do today doesn't matter 2 months from now because it can change. So there's uncertainty about what America will bring to bear, but America's not going to be idle on this. And so I think that we're probably going to wind up seeing foreign policy that says, hey, new Syrian government, if you're good actors, we're going to help you rebuild. Mm-hmm. We're gonna be there for you on trade relations with other countries. We're gonna work with you on the Abraham Accords and try to get you in the mix. We have power and influence that we'll be glad to bring. And it doesn't mean we're gonna spend billions of dollars. It just means we're gonna be your friend, and that can go a long way towards making a new day. Iran right now, a couple things there. Iran and Russia, what do they do? If Russia feels like they're losing something that they absolutely have to have, the question becomes, will they take action to seize it or hold it? And even then, can they? Mm-hmm. Because they're so stretched thin by the awful decisions they made in Ukraine.
Yeah.
And then Iran's on its heels right now. Iran right now, I think we're looking at a place where Iran could even be negotiated with, because they recognize they just lost Hezbollah. They just lost the land bridge. They're losing everything they try to do against Israel. And the Houthis are no help. They're just a bunch of ragtags.
And you got Trump coming back.
And you got Trump coming back. So Iran may wind up negotiating something here in the next few days that could wind up being significant. But there's always wild cards in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. If you don't like the politics in the Middle East, wait 10 minutes, it'll change.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
So I can't answer your question fully, but I can say this. Bashar al-Assad being gone for today is a win.
Yep, I agree.
But there's a whole lot more to do to make it right. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
All right. Yay.
For now.
All right.
Yay for now.
Take me to a break. We'll come right back. Next one. Did you see what happened in Notre Dame? And I don't mean, by the way, the college. I'm talking about the cathedral. Did you see what happened this past weekend? It's pretty cool. Dipper number two, new boss is the old boss. Trump's back. We'll tell you all about it. Y'all stay tuned. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just giving you all the truth you could sling on a bumper sticker. Yes, indeed. So number two on the triple dipper. I feel like we've already had three dippers. I mean, we did Daniel Penny stuff. We did the dipper about, you know, all of that with the shooting of the CEO for United Healthcare. And then I did the whole thing about that's a triple dipper. It's going to be a five dipper day.
Really, yeah. This makes up for the one dipper days last week.
Oh, yeah. I just got somebody on the Twitter feed, must be watching us there, just responded, said, dipper number one, give the Kurds their country back. Spent time there in Dahuk and Erbil. Great people. And then he says, this is a picture of me and the kids at a wedding. Hey, but Paul, the picture didn't come through. So, it didn't come through. So send the picture, man. But yes, I have heard. I remember Iraqis in Baghdad. They would go vacation in Kurdistan. They called it Kurdistan, which is the northern parts in Erbil, and they would literally talk about how it was just everything was okay up there. It was perfect. It was beautiful. There were flowing waters. There was like man, why don't you move there?
Yeah.
All right, dipper numero dos. Let's talk about new boss is the old boss. Did you see this weekend Trump going to the cathedral at Notre Dame?
I feel like I saw every clip that was made on my Twitter, like of the handshakes, the Joe Biden kissing up to him. I saw all of it.
I think one of the most meme-worthy moments was the picture of Trump sitting there in a chair, just looking casual, kind of sitting there looking over at Jill Biden, and she's smiling at him.
Yeah.
And it's like, what are they talking about? And the thing on Twitter was to caption the conversation.
Yeah. But that Trump handshake, you know, he's a master of the pool handshake.
Yeah.
That was one of the most violent ones I saw. Like
with him and French Macron.
Macron. Yeah. Like the first time seeing him, you know, he's just like, let me know who's the boss. Who's back again. It's me. You know,
yeah, he also did that with, you know, there's so many protocols with the royal family from England.
Yeah.
He met with Prince William. Mm-hmm. So they had a great meeting, but he met with Prince William and he stopped short of stepping right up into the space where you would do a handshake. He stopped short of it, so the prince had to reach out, and then he did the kind of the pull handshake there. And you look at it and think, does he do this on purpose?
I think it's just
ingrained?
I think when you're Trump and you've been in a powerful position like yes, even before he was a president where he was a billionaire, I think this is just stuff you learn along the way of how to do things.
It's like putting somebody in the short chair.
Yeah.
Well, the bottom line is this. So I pulled one piece off Fox News. So I call it new boss is the old boss. The new boss is the old boss. And the interesting dynamic is this was a international world leader affair. And the fact that Macron from France invited President Trump to come to this event and sit next to the First Lady, Jill Biden, is very significant. He was being treated like he's already the president. That's what people are saying right now. It's as if the president himself is already the president. So President Trump President-elect Trump held court in France on Saturday, receiving eager greetings from a host of familiar world leaders. Yeah, there was this one scene, too, by the way. He was working his way to his chair, and he had to pass by all kinds of other heads, and they're all standing up to greet him.
Yeah.
You see it?
Yeah, it's stuff like that goes, you don't see people doing that for Joe. I'll just say that.
No.
You know, just stuff like that points to how much just bigger of a presence Donald Trump has in general than Joe did.
Yeah. I mean, the pomp and circumstance was something else. And he did, he not only did he show up there in and amongst them all, but then he had key meetings with several of them.
Mm-hmm.
France, and of course the meeting he had with Prince William of Great Britain. And somebody, I think it's Raymond Arroyo from Fox, tweeted out, said, it's hard to tell if this is the reopening of Notre Dame or the reopening of Trump as a global leader.
Yeah, I think it was both.
I think it was both. One other, the Not The Bee account, which is like the serious side of Babylon Bee, said it appears Trump is already acting as president. No need for inauguration. The world's been waiting for the U.S. to finally have leadership, and it just walked in the door at Notre Dame. By the way, noticeably missing, the article points out, was Joe Biden, who the White House cited a scheduling conflict.
Scheduling conflict with his afternoon nap.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, scheduling conflict. Do you recall seeing him do anything important this weekend? I don't.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Pray tell, what was the scheduling conflict?
His afternoon nap. I think that's what it was.
It was pudding day, so, and he had to be there.
We've had this on the books for a while now.
Yeah. Kind of important. So anyway, I say all this to say, What we got as a situation right now is that Trump is already the world leaders. I started to say this a little bit last week. The world leaders are already looking to see what he's doing. They could care less what Joe is doing. But here's the thing. He could have easily dissed Jill Biden, and he didn't. You know, what I've always appreciated is, as much as they want to rail about him, he's a gentleman. For the most part, I mean, he'll get brassy, he'll get crass sometimes. He'll say things in a way that maybe I wouldn't say it. I don't know, but I'm not him. But he sat down next to Jill Biden, and as far as we know, was a complete gentleman. He greeted her, he treated her with respect. He didn't try to pretend like, oh, how dare you sit next to me? None of that. It just looked like what you would want to see. It was a American leader on the world stage, and everybody wanted to shake his hand, and he even treated those who don't like him with respect. And then he went with Kristen Welker and did an hour and a half long interview and just held her feet to the fire the entire time. I mean, it's like, oh, Lord, thank you. More on this when we get back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Welcome to hour number three on a Meatloaf Monday. Hey, by the way, I got to remind you guys, we got a lot going on over here at Right Side Media. That's the parent company for who we are. Right Side Radio is just one of our presentations, but Right Side Media is the parent company. And we just rolled out two more podcast lines. So if you're a podcaster, if you like watching, especially video podcasts, we got you covered. So we have four separate podcast lines going now. Right Click and Right Philosophy have been going on now for a bit. But we just, in the last few days, launched two more. One is Liberty Minute with former Navy SEAL Jared Hudson. And the other is The Controversial Mom with Emily Jones, founder of Moms for Liberty for Madison County. And both of them are just great. And they're already getting response. And so we love the fact that we got sort of a Right Side family growing here with you know, different people contributing to the overall content. But that's our goal. Our goal is to provide you with conservative content in a variety of mediums. And man, we are hitting the mark. So right now, between the radio and then the audio podcast, which still has like almost 270,000 downloads. And then we've got the the four video podcasts, and then we got the written op-ed that goes out every single week and got published today, as a matter of fact. You can find it. It always goes to 1819 News first by agreement, and then everybody else in the state gets their copy. A lot of stuff happening, and we're loving it. If you want to watch us live online or see anything that we got going on, one of the things you might want to do is get to our daily email newsletter. It's called the Right Side Report. So here the deal is, if you're listening to the show right now, you know we have this text line, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Just text the word newsletter to that, and you'll get an automatic response back that lets you sign up for a daily email newsletter. It goes out, tells you what all the things are that we got going on, gives you the inside scoop on what the Triple Dipper is going to be that day, gives you all the stuff. Right Side Report by email. Just send newsletter, the word newsletter, to 833-68-RIGHT, and we will square you away. All right, let me keep moving here. New boss is the old boss. I got a great text here from Mike from Coxey, Alabama. He says, I find myself swelling with pride when I hear stories like Trump going to France and everyone wants to shake his hand. It says, it's been a while since I felt like that, but it feels great. Totally agree.
Yeah, stuff like that matters.
Yeah, it does.
Like having a leader that has a presence to him and other countries respect and stuff like that matters. Yeah. And little stuff just like the Trump going to sporting events, like showing that he cares about the culture of a country, of his own country too, matters.
Yeah.
Like when was the last time you saw Joe Biden at anything like that, like something of cultural significance in the United States, like a big game or something? Like I can't think of any.
Well, he does go to the beach. And he does occasionally shop for a book on Nantucket.
I stand corrected. No, I'm just kidding.
No, you're so right. And that's the thing. If you're going to be a man of the people, you got to be out among the people, right? If you're going to say you care about your constituents every once in a while, you got to be where they are. And then on top of that, the idea that he's being greeted by world leaders, well, and some of them are greeting him out of respect, some are greeting him out of friendship, and some are greeting him out of fear. Mm-hmm. And I'm good with all the above.
Yep, exactly.
Because right now, Joe walks in the room and they forget to put him in the picture.
That's true. Yeah.
Joe walks in the room and they have to send one of them over there to help him find his way to the spot on the ground where he's supposed to stand.
And they stuck him in the back corner.
In the back corner. Anyway, what's interesting to watch as the new boss is the old boss, is how other nations right now are pursuing what you might call a MAGA-type agenda. So the Dutch, Breitbart has a story, came out Friday. The Dutch are out there putting a cap on mass migration. They're not allowed. They're no longer going to allow. They're putting hard limits on their population to limit mass migration. They're a pretty, apparently, I didn't know this, but the Netherlands is a fairly like densely populated country. 18 million is not a huge country, but for the landmass they have, it's pretty full. And they've decided, you know what? We're done with this whole mass migration thing. So they're basically closing their borders for mass migration. They're not doing any more of the rampant EU wants us to take more people kind of stuff. And they're saying done with it.
Well, I thought that was racist.
Yeah, well, you know what? I think the Dutch are saying we don't care anymore because it's our country. That's a huge piece. In fact, the article I've got here from Breitbart says, echoing Donald Trump, Prime Minister Michael Boone, who represented the Wilders Party in the population cap debate, said it's time to build a society in which the Dutch come first again. What does that sound like? Sound a little familiar?
It does sound familiar.
How about this one? Apparently, I did not know, you know, CPAC, the conservative conference, I did not know there was a CPAC Argentina. Did you know that?
No.
I did not know this.
Doesn't surprise me with Malay in charge there.
And that's where I was headed. And Ben Shapiro just spoke at CPAC Argentina.
Really?
And he said he believes the world is going to be following Milei's success. And what is Milei doing? He's making Argentina first in its own business dealings. He is downsizing their government. He is right-sizing things. He's like basically got what's the word he uses?
Fuerte.
Yeah. We're probably cussing on there and don't even know it.
Yeah, somebody in Argentina just got offended.
Somebody's like, tell them to stop it. but he's basically like a one-man wrecking ball, but in a good way. Oh, by the way, doesn't that sound familiar? And then you got things happening in other parts of the world where you look at it and go, if it had been Trump in charge, would that have happened? Well, you've got, where'd this one story? This National Pulse. You've got a guy, National Pulse has a story came out Friday, Romania. They're a NATO member, or they're set to be elected to NATO. And they have a populist pro-life candidate named Calin Georgescu, who could wind up upsetting things. And the reality is, he's a pro-Trump candidate. And then you got Giorgia Meloni from Italy, who had her picture made with Trump the other day and is like, whoop, whoop. You can tell they were like, and she's an outspoken conservative, Italy first, we're going to right-size government, stop talking to me about wokeness, and let's get back to business of us being Italians. It's refreshing to watch. And then you had the whole thing where Justin Trudeau, Prime Minister of Canada, made a quick trip down to Mar-a-Lago, have a cup of coffee and talk things over because we want to keep a good relationship with you. Yeah, that wouldn't have happened if Harris had gotten elected.
He said something like, if Trump says these things, he means it. That's like people talk about Trump's unpredictability being a bad thing. I think that shows it's a good thing.
I don't even think it's unpredictability. I think if he says it and he means it, that means it's pretty predictable what's going to happen if you do the thing you said you wouldn't do. Meanwhile, you've got situations happening on the world stage that are pretty incredible, like South Korea. So South Korea has a situation, if I understand it, and I will not try to tell you that I have studied up on this one in great detail, but as I understand it, the South Korean president is considered to be a progressive liberal. He got elected and immediately began making decisions that have soured his approval ratings among the people and have increased the ability of the legislature to see more elected conservatives. The elected conservatives then began to push back at his big budget, big government ideas. The elected legislature, more conservative now, decided, no, your multi-billion dollar plan for budgeting is really not a good idea, and we're not doing that. So what did he do? He tried to declare martial law. He tried to say, I'm the president. You can't stand in my way. He got his backside handed to him. I mean, like on a platter. And so all of a sudden, old boy finds himself at risk of being just basically deposed entirely because not only did the legislature buck up on him and say, that's not going to work, it's a conservative legislature. We're looking at a sea change around the world right now as the old boss comes in as the new boss, and you feel a difference on the world stage. And it's amazing to think that what would have happened if Kamala Harris had been able to steal that election. Can you imagine?
I don't want to.
And I still want to know what Trump and Jill Biden talked about at Notre Dame.
I do too. Somebody's going to have a hot mic somewhere in there.
Gotta be.
There's got to be some lip readers somewhere.
I think she leaned over and said, look, I'll get you the Kamala file, but you didn't get it from me.
Or maybe Trump said, thanks for your vote. And she was like, you're not supposed to say that here. It's public. We're in public.
I saw one meme that said, I just told Joe, Mark that here, he thought he was voting for himself, but I had him voting for you. All right, take me to a break, brother. That was Dipper number two, new boss is the old boss. We're going to jump on into beating the trans agenda, and I got a bunch of text messages I got to catch up on, so you guys stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Man, saving the world one soundbite at a time. So crazy thing is I'm looking up on the Fox screen, and there it is, the exact same story I just finished doing. Trump hits the world stage as Biden checks out. They're doing the exact same. I think they look at our stuff.
I was going to say, they listen to our show right now.
They
do. So, yeah.
It's crazy. I mean, every night. I mean, plagiarism is the highest form of flattery, right? There you go.
It's true.
Jim from Grove Oak checked in. He says, watching Jill Biden kiss up to Donald J. DJ Trumpy Trump, he said, was the funniest thing since Election Day. Okay. Jeffro from Indiana says, Phil, if you think about it, if Trump is doing more as a president-elect than Joe Biden has done in 4 years as the president because no one respected him and he didn't do anything to gain respect, I'd say you nailed it, brother. Marshall from Dubai says everybody is getting in line, and he has a tweet or a meme, I'm sorry. Justin Trudeau, I forgot about this. Trump saying, why don't we just make Canada the 51st state? It is... his meme is Trudeau and Trump standing there, and Trudeau saying, "Are you serious about making Canada the 51st state?" And Trump says, "Absolutely. Figure it's a surefire way to win a gold medal in curling."
That's why he did it. Makes sense now. Smart move.
JT Lacey Springs says, "My favorite Christmas card this year, and it is a picture of U-Haul trucks parked in front of the White House from the Bidens." Nice. David from Bucky's again. He says, "Phil, they put Biden in the back corner so he can lean on the wall and not fall." And you know what? There you go. Chris from Huntsville says, "I don't know what you're telling me, Chris from Huntsville. Is this, do I need to see the text before that, I guess?
Yeah, the text before it, yeah.
Got it. He says, "Damascus National Museum has full reconstruction of the Dura Synagogue." Okay. Subject of one doctoral paper I wrote. He said, "Our only glimpse of illustrated Jewish Bibles in classical antiquity." Really? That's wild. He said, "In Baghdad, the mob smashed and looted historic artifacts willy-nilly. Much to be preserved of world heritage there. Lord, restrain the hands of idiots." Yeah, I got a great personal story on that I might tell in a minute about the Baghdad National Archives. Jeff from Huntsville says, "Do you think there could be a better time for Trump coming into power in the States? Thank you, Lord." I would agree. And then Steve from Tennessee says, "Saw an article about Sweden. The number one vacation site for their asylum seekers is back to the country they supposedly fled from. What a scam." No kidding. They want to go back and visit their home country, but they don't want to, they don't want to live there. So to the point of, so we were talking about a while ago about what's happening in Syria and how much is, I mean, y'all, the level of his, of archaeology and history and, you know, things that we would consider to be museum quality here are laying around on the ground in some places over there. It's crazy. And we are watching right now as there are, there's some measure of looting taking place in the presidential palace now that Assad has fled. So when I was in Baghdad in 2004, I discovered that the Iraqi National Archives, much like our Library of Congress, was in my AO. Because Central Baghdad was my AO. So all the seats of government and the major facilities were in my AO, area of operations. So on one particular day, because part of my job involved trying to help the new government to get stand up, in the middle of all the combat ops and everything else, you got to do nice things too. And so I decided I'm going to pay. We didn't announce ourselves because you never announce yourself where you're going in a war zone. So I rolled in the gate of the Iraqi National Archives one day. It had been looted and burned by the Iraqi people. And they just went in there and just tore the place up. And I had heard there was a guy there who was like a dual citizen, Iraqi, British citizen, who was there to try and help them get it put back together. So I rolled in the gate, you know, pretty heavy. I've got a infantry platoon with me, and I get out, and I'm, you know, in all my battle rattle, and I walk up, and he comes out, and he goes, what's going on? What's happening? I said, I introduced myself, and I said, "I came here to see if we could do something to help you." He looked at me, he goes, "You're here to help me?" And I said, "If you want help, well," and he's like reluctant, he goes, "Well, I mean, come inside." And so we went inside. He has his doctorate from, you know, Cambridge or something like that. And we're talking, and he's very standoffish at first. And he says, I must say, Major, because I was a major at the time, because I must say, Major, if your people had done a better job of guarding major facilities, we wouldn't be having this conversation. And I looked at him and I said, "Well, I must say, if your people had not burned and looted their own facilities, we wouldn't be having this conversation." And he stared at me and he goes, "Well, that's fair." And then we had a good conversation. So
I was going to say, that does sound pretty fair.
So we did all we could to help him, you know, locate things that had been taken. And he was trying to restore the records. It was like the record, you know, historical records of the country. And we'd find them all over the place. We'd be on a raid in Baghdad. We'd go into a building. We'd find piles of books that had come out of the archives. And I would get him on the cell phone and say, "Do you want these?" "Yes, I'll send somebody over." So we'd secure the site and he'd come get it.
Wow.
And anyway, a lot was happening. I did find an article about him later. He was doing great things trying to rebuild the archives. What you can do, man, what you can do. All right, we get back from this break. That was like a total rabbit chase.
That was good.
Can I count that as a sixth dipper?
Yeah, that's maybe a fifth and a half dipper.
A fifth and a half dipper.
Yeah.
It's been quite the dipper day.
Yeah, it has.
We're going to come back with one more dipper, too. I got a full schedule of stuff today. I told you no guests today because I wanted to unpack this content. So beating the trans agenda. There's some new developments. And I told you guys, I don't know, months ago, I told you that one of the things that I saw coming was there was going to be mass tort litigation, meaning like class action suits. And we're not seeing those yet, but we are beginning to see the trickle of what I would call legal precedent as people who have been victimized by the transgender agenda, the medical community being complicit in this whole gender affirming care, which is such a misnomer, that lawsuits are beginning to spring up. And they're not all, by the way, lawsuits like the state of Texas, I'll tell you about in a minute. Some of them are the aggrieved individuals themselves who say, my life has been ruined because when I was a young child, you mutilated me. You over-medicated me. You sterilized me. And that's happening right now. Those lawsuits are beginning to spring up. And we're going to talk about what it means to beat back the trans agenda. And some of that is legal. And there's a lot of things happening right now. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here, y'all, I'm talking about it. It's Alabama. This is a show that goes way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Dipper number three as we get into go-home mode here on a Meatloaf Monday. So, beating the trans agenda. Beating the trans agenda is done a variety of ways. There's going to have to be the cultural fight. There's going to have to be the people who are willing to say no and stand up. And there's going to have to also, by the way, be a seizing of the messaging. Like the liberal squeaky wheel, the transgender agenda is like just, I mean, it's everywhere. We got to re-seize the message. And then, oh, by the way, I think there's also not just state legislation, but there's legal action. So legal in the form of legislating the matter, and then the question of lawsuits. I am an attorney, but I do not consider myself to be litigious. I have said multiple times that I'll be the first one to tell my client when what they're asking for can't be done, because just the fact that they feel aggrieved does not mean they have an actionable lawsuit. But there are times when I believe that there is no other way to make someone whole except through the legal system. And we are watching right now as the pushback on the trans agenda is turning into a legal fight left and right, to the extent that it even was argued before the Supreme Court of the United States last week. Now, it'll probably be spring before we know the results. But what happened is Alabama, being one of the states that we put a ban on the transgender treatments and surgeries on minors. Tennessee did most recently. I don't know how it was chosen over Alabama's or other, but the bottom line is that the Tennessee case went to the Supreme Court. But the Tennessee case has ramifications that cover all of us. The court seemed very inclined to side with the states for passing this law. 26 states have now passed laws similar to Alabama and Tennessee. But Alabama Attorney General, according to a story here on Yellowhammer News a few days ago, Alabama Attorney General Steve Marshall has criticized those who are challenging the state bans on transgender surgeries and medications for minors. He said Alabama is proud to help defend Tennessee's common sense law protecting kids from powerful, often irreversible chemical and surgical sex change procedures. And by the way, let's take that messaging back. It is not gender-affirming care. I will only say that in the mocking sense from now on. There is nothing gender-affirming about what they're talking about. In fact, it is gender non-confirming. You know what it is? It's a sex change procedure. It's an attempt at a sex change procedure. It's a distortion of what the biology of the child is. But yes, Attorney General Steve Marshall says, kids suffering from gender dysphoria deserve so much better than hormones and surgeries. And yet, as we uncovered through court-ordered discovery while defending Alabama's similar law, health officials in the outgoing administration, Biden's administration, teamed up with a group called WPATH, the World Professional Association for Transgender Health, which, by the way, is nothing professional about it, to issue purported so-called standards of care that were intentionally crafted to mislead the courts. So what they did, here's what they do it. They form an organization and they give it a fancy name and they give it a lot of funding because the activists are funding it big time. So WPATH is now considered to be the leading expert on transgender care for children. This is so wonderful. We have an expert organization like this, except it's not all staffed by medical personnel. There's a lot of non-medical activists in the organization. And then they issue what they call the standards of care. And then they go around and they lobby to have their standards of care adopted. So you create the issue, then you create the expert testimony, then you lobby to have the expert testimony accepted as being gospel, and then it gets incorporated into standards and regulations and procedures by government. If that's not a self-licking ice cream cone, I don't know what is. But that's what happened. And WPATH has literally ignored quality research that was contrary to what they wanted their agenda to promote. But we're seeing it. It's not just the SCOTUS arguments. We're seeing it in things like this. So a story that came off of, what's the name of this? The MRC. I forgot what the name of MRC is. Media, MRCTV.org. What is that? It's a media watch group, isn't it?
This is the Media Research Center.
That's it, Media Research Center. Thank you very much. Media Research Center has a story that came out Friday. America's top, and I hate to say this, but it was called it, mutilator of children is being sued by a young girl that she helped to chemically castrate and abuse. So this is an appalling case. This is, bottom line, I think we're going to see more of this. I think you're going to see a lot more of this. As some of these minors age up from the time in which they had their surgeries. I mean, can you imagine doing a mastectomy on a 13-year-old? Because you can. So as the Supreme Court currently weighs a Tennessee law, a private lawsuit has now been brought by a 20-year-old woman. See, here's the deal. The age of majority in most states is 18 or 19 years old. In Alabama, it's 19. So at 20 years old, she filed her lawsuit. She claims that at 12 years old, this doctor but gave her cross-sex hormones at 13 and then a double mastectomy at 14 after starting her on puberty blockers at 12. And she claims that her parents were told her that she was at risk for suicide if they didn't do these treatments. Well, first of all, her parents are idiots. Her parents are absolute idiots because they were the ones in charge of a minor child. Her name is Clementine, and I'm not sure what her full name is. I'm just going, it's Kaya Clementine Breen. She's now a 20-year-old woman who spent her teen years believing that she was a boy, was treated like, you know, all these healthy parts of her were changed for no other reason except for the agenda. She is now detransitioned, and she says she is never going to be able to get her life back the way it could have been. Because rather than send her to counseling and help her through some issues, they immediately began cutting on her and giving her medication. She is now bringing a massive lawsuit against this doctor. This doctor, by the way, which doctor is this? Witch doctor. That sounds like it is a witch doctor. But the doctor, whose last name I believe is Olson Kennedy. Yeah, Dr. Olson Kennedy, who practices, I think, in California, is one of the most prolific. She's the medical director of the Center for Trans Youth Health and Development at Children's Hospital Los Angeles. And so they have a whole department for this. Well, they're getting sued. And I don't know whether or not it will prevail, but I think you're going to see a lot more of this. How about this? Texas. Texas Tribune, Dateline about 30 days ago. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton is suing a second doctor for allegedly violating state law and providing so-called gender-affirming medical care. Again, it's not gender-affirming, but I'm reading from a liberal rag, Texas Tribune. So Dr. Hector Granados is an El Paso pediatric endocrinologist, and Paxton, the Attorney General for Texas, accuses him in the lawsuit of prescribing puberty blockers and hormone therapies to more than 20 minors to treat their gender dysphoria after Texas passed a law that said don't do it. In other words, he was saying, you know what, I'm going to do it whether you like it or not. Well, he is now being sued by the state of Texas. And good on you, Attorney General Ken Paxton. Thank you very much. That kind of thing, though, has to happen. States have to pass the laws, but then their attorney generals have to enforce them. And I'll be honest with you, if you don't put some teeth in that, you'll have doctors like this Hector Granados who will keep doing it to kids no matter what the law says, unless you put teeth in it. So right now, this is the second time PACS has done this. There's another one, Dr. May Lau, an adolescent medicine physician and a professor at University of Texas, who was performing, you know, these kind of treatments on kids after the law had been passed. Paxton ain't playing. And that's where we have to be. We have got to be in a place where the courts will allow the lawsuits to go forward, and precedents have to get set that say that this is considered to be a travesty. You did things to a minor that they will never be able to overcome. You have to have attorney generals who will enforce laws that you have to have state legislatures pass. And then we're going to wait and see what SCOTUS says about the Tennessee law, because that will have an impact on all the states doing this. And I really do believe that what we're going to wind up seeing is an affirming of these states' efforts to curtail these heinous treatments on kids. All right, but here's what's interesting. It's not just the individual doctors. It's not just the attorney general going after doctors who are violating their state laws. You may be interested to know that the Biden administration, the U.S. government, has these health rule lawsuits piling up against it right now, because transgender health care protections from the Biden administration are rampant. You got 18 states, a children's health clinic, the Catholic Medical Association, and a conservative legal group that all helped overturn Roe v. Wade, who are now looking at the fact you've got states that are dealing with stuff from the federal government that literally need to be overturned. And so the federal government is now being sued on a variety of cases. One of the groups doing it is Alliance Defending Freedom, and I love ADF. They're a great organization. But Alliance Defending Freedom said that it's involved in two lawsuits right now over the rule and is battling with the administration over much more. There's so much going on, but y'all, this is exactly what we have to do. If we don't stop this, I said the other day, and I really do believe this, this is the kind of thing that will cause a nation to be judged by future generations. It's what we're looking at right now is an unfortunate medical fad where somehow or another, activists were able to say that what is wrong is right, and the medical community saw an opportunity to make a buck, and they got on board. Never mind what it does to these kids. Never mind the fact that whole nations, like in Europe, are banning this. You still got people making big bucks off of this right here in the United States. And don't think it's just out there in California. It's here in Alabama. It is in places that surround us. You had UAB, you had Vanderbilt University. I'm just telling you. But our state and Tennessee both passed laws to prevent it. 26 states have done so. More of it, please. But if we don't get a grip on this, future generations are going to look back at us and go, God almighty, what were they thinking? How could they have even allowed that to happen to one kid, much less the thousands? How did they allow an entire generation to grow up believing that how you were born is fluid somehow? That's the most asinine thing I've ever heard of. That defies common sense. I mean, the perpetuation of the species doesn't even allow for it. So you look at it and go, what the heck? You just basically took a bunch of kids and said, I'm sorry, the way you were born is wrong. But we're going to call it gender affirming when we tell you how to fix the fact that you're wrong. How about this? It's not gender affirming at all. It's called an attempted sex change. And that's all it is. And it's an agenda, activist-driven thing, and we have to push back on it. But we're beating it. I guarantee you we are. Right now, 26 states, slightly more than half, have passed laws. Attorney generals are bucking up. Supreme Court of the United States is probably going to affirm, and once they do, you're going to see more states. And then sooner or later, I hope what we're going to wind up seeing is the federal government saying, you know what? As a matter of principle, we're just done with you. No more of this anywhere in our nation. How about that? All right, we're going to take the last break of the day here on a Meatloaf Monday, and then we'll come right back and get a few text messages and close her out. You are in go-home mode right now. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just making common sense like a superpower. Chavvy from Madison just checked in. He said, he heard me say it. He said, self-licking ice cream cone. He said, there's a new one I'll be using in the future. You're welcome to it, brother. And I can't claim credit. I wish I could. And then the grades are in from John. John says, JP and Phil are today's co-winners with a mega ultra astronomical beyond perfect A triple plus for their best performances ever. Wow. Congratulations. Says, by the way, JP, I got all 47 of my Bowl Mania picks filled out, and I chose Alabama to beat Michigan in the Reliquist Bowl, and I've got SMU winning the national championship.
Good luck with SMU.
SMU, the national championship. Man.
They may lose round one.
Hey, let me go to the phones real quick. I think Jeff Rowe from Indiana is on there. Jeff Rowe, how you doing, buddy?
I'm heading north, man. That's all that matters.
So somebody finally let you pull up and hitch up to one, huh?
Yes, they did, and I did, and I'm gone. I'm in Tennessee now.
Well, good. Is it raining where you are? Because it's like foggy and rainy here, and is it a mess, or is it all right?
Dry and clear, actually.
What? Okay. I don't even know where we are then.
22.
What do you think about all this stuff we talked about today?
On these transsexuals and everything, we're going to be in a lot of trouble because can someone with mental illness sign a document?
If they've been adjudged mentally incompetent, no. If they've just been talked about, yes.
Well, if you've got gender dysphoria, and it's like your fix or whatever to sign these documents and everything, what's going to happen to all these people that's in the Army and all the military and everything, and all these prisons and everything, where the state is basically doing their surgeries for these people?
Oh, yeah.
That I don't think are mentally competent to sign a document that's going to transform their body. I mean, that's just insane.
Yeah, the whole thing's insane. The idea, by the way, that you can actually change someone's sex is just it. You look at it and go, "All right, you know, imagination's a big thing, but you can't make imagination real every time." I mean, I wanted to be Batman when I was a kid. Didn't happen. Just you know, you look at it and go, "Come on!" At some point, the imagination has to stop.
But that's what I say. So, as a lawyer, like I say, as a lawyer, are these people competent to sign documents that's going to augment their bodies? I wouldn't think they would be deemed not competent to sign such a document.
Well, that's the part of the problem we got right now. Is that is pursuing the transgender agenda is not considered legally disqualifying, and I would say that in many ways it is. You have to have an adjudication of a competence. You can't just say they're incompetent and then all of a sudden you can't sign papers. You got to have a judge say it. Well, good luck getting all the judges in California to say it because half of them believe in it.
Well, if I asked the doctor to cut my legs off and everything, do you think they might declare that I was mentally incompetent?
I would think that they would find some reason for concern, but yeah. Hey, man, I got 30 seconds to the music. You be safe on the road, all right?
Have a good one, Phil.
See you, buddy. Yeah, it makes no Jeff's got a great point. Is the question of the person's mental competency would have to come in when they say, please cut parts off my body so I can be something that I can't really be. But you also have to look at it, and here's the thing, those lawsuits I talked about a minute ago, they were medical professionals who were looking at this going, well, that just makes great sense. And I've been through medical school and my residency, and I'm probably board certified, and I've done all the things to say that I understand what biology really is. And I'm still going to say, screw that, and then start lopping parts off of innocent people, minor children. The Hippocratic Oath is just being defiled by all of this. And I look at it and think, it's got to stop. Otherwise, future generations are going to look back at us with this complete disdain. All right, but hey, I do believe there are more of us than there are of them. I do believe that God is still on his throne. Stay in the fight. We'll see you tomorrow.